So yes, as you heard, I got back from India on Monday, and on Sunday, this time last week exactly, I left the North Indian Order Convention. It was a convention, not a weekend. It was the first that we'd ever held. It was for just 4 days, and 18 of us, which was all the order members working in North India, bar one, plus a few others who visit but work. Most of whom are resident, but some of whom visit. The one person who was missing was very ill. In fact, just 2 weeks before, she'd nearly died. So I want to tell you a bit about that convention because it illustrates very clearly the kind of work that the India Dhamma Trust is being asked to support. It's been supported by the Karunar Trust until quite recently, but they're gradually withdrawing funds. They don't feel that they can in conscience continue to support internal work. So I want to illustrate the kind of work that we're asking money for. That event could not have existed if it wasn't for the support that we've had so far from Karunar and will have in the future from the India Dhamma Trust. So this event, this North Indian Order Convention, took place at the Osho Cactus Nursery. It's a very good place for a convention. It's owned by a Dhamma Mitra, Raghveer Singh. He's asked for ordination. He's an older man who's retired from a government job. Anyway, he's now left Osho behind and is fully convinced by the approach of the Triratna community. And he's renamed his centre the Triratna Dhyan Sadhana Kendra, the Triratna Meditation Centre. It's 50 yards from the GT. GT means Grand Trunk. It's the Grand Trunk Road, which is probably the oldest and busiest highway in Asia. It runs from Kabul to Kolkata, right past our retreat centre. When I say runs, it didn't always run. Quite often there were just lines and lines of lorries hooting all the way up and down the road as there was a big traffic jam. So very, very propitious circumstances for a retreat. Furthermore, the monsoon had started in North India and then stopped. I'd previously been in Delhi, in Pune, and I've got a monsoon kaser, because in the monsoon your kaser gets very damp and then goes mouldy, and I forgot to get the mould off before I came. But anyway, by the time I got to Delhi, it was stinking hot. Literally stinking hot, and very humid, so not very pleasant. The circumstances were not very propitious in many ways. I've never seen so many mosquitoes. Anyway, none of the Indians seemed to mind. Dhammashala and I just sat in damp heaps here and there. So we reviewed the work that is being done in North India. And yet there are only 19, well, I think there are only 15 order members living in North India, and 60% of them are old men, retired old men, some of whom are very, very active and some of whom are, well, quite old and quite unable to do much. But we found in looking at what's going on in North India, as a result of the work that's being done by them, as a result of the support that's come from Karunar and hopefully will come from the IDT, that we've got Dhamma Mitras and lots of Dhamma Mitras in many of the states, most of the states of North India. We've got Dhamma Mitras in Punjab, in Haryana, Rajasthan, in Delhi, in Uttar Pradesh, Uttarakhand, Bihar and Madhya Pradesh. And we've got Mitras in other states, of course, further south. But this is what is known as the cow belt, although Bhante says we should transform the cow belt into the lion belt. But yes, we've got many, many mitras all over North India as a result of the work that we've been doing, these 18, 19 people have been doing. Two Dhammacharinis were on this retreat. Now, North India is socially much, much more conservative than Maharashtra. Maharashtra is relatively advanced for India, especially in relation to the position of women. In much of North India, women still have a hyper-traditional position. Most women will not address a man unless they cover their head. Many won't be able to address a woman, to a man. And I often find on retreats that the women want to speak to me, but they don't find it easy to do so. And often it takes quite a bit of courage and quite a bit of encouragement from me for them to be able to address me directly. But these two Dhammacharinis, very impressive women. Confident, positive, very active, doing whatever they can to teach the Dhamma. One of them, Metavadita, quite a young woman. She's got a family, she's got a job, but she does a lot of talks all over the area where she lives. She lives in Dehradun, and she travels further afield as well. And she's very confident, very bold. She goes into situations which are predominantly Hindu, and she proclaims the Dhamma very strongly, and she says she gets quite a bit of reaction. She seemed to rather enjoy that. And I was so delighted to see these two women, because it's from the from how the women are doing that, in a way, you can tell how successful the Dhamma is. Dr. Ambedkar said this. He said that whenever he gave a talk, he always looked to see the condition of the women, how confident they were, how much they were to the front, because from that he could tell the nature of the community that he was coming into. So I find that myself. And I must say, overall during this trip, I've had a clearer impression of the women's wing of the order in India than I've had for a long time. I haven't had much opportunity to work with the women's wing sort of en masse. I work with some women order members, but not seeing many of them together. We had a retreat at Baja for the combined men's and women's ordination teams plus auxiliaries, people who are helping them. And I was particularly struck by the strength of the women's team. This is the flowering of work which was begun all those years ago by Padmasuri. She can be very, very proud of the work that she did. By the work that Trimala continued heroically for 10 or 12 years, much of that on her own, just developing the basis for a women's wing of the order. And then that has been continued very, very successfully by Karunamaya, ably supported by Vajrasuri. Karunamaya is a Dhamma heroine. She's a wonderful woman, and she's created something quite remarkable, a real spiritual community, a women's wing of our order to be proud of. So yes, I rejoice very greatly in the work that Srimala and Padmasuri did, and the work that Karunamaya with Vajrasuri are doing now much more equally supported by Dhammacharinis, particularly Nanashuri and Vijaya. It's a wonderful thing that they've achieved, and well, we've achieved, our order has achieved, supported by Karunar Trust, and hopefully in the future by the IDT. They've created a real revolution in social attitudes, at least within our order. Women are not just sitting in the corner doing the cooking. They're playing an active and leading part in our movement. It's not easy in the conditions that we have in India. Women's traditional role is very much within the family, within the house. It's very difficult for them to get out for classes, for retreats, and so on. But through the work that our dear sisters have done over the years, this has flowered in a quite wonderful way. these situations, as I say, are even more extreme in the north. So to see these two Dhammacharinis was something quite special for me. I volunteered to do another retreat. So one of the Dhammacharinis said, will we be allowed to come on that retreat? And I said to them, well, will you allow the men to come? But they still having to work with those attitudes. So I want to speak especially of one of the products of that work in the north, who wasn't able to be there because she'd come very close to death. That is the wonderful, the lovely Shraddhavadri, an exceptionally bright and active young woman of 28, who came from our centre in Modinagar and was really born and brought up in Triratna. She'd, as I say, been very ill indeed. She has a job as a lecturer in physical education in a college near Agra, under quite difficult conditions. And she developed water on the lung, and the college staff had not allowed her to take time off to get treatment. Eventually, she'd been too weak, and she'd had to go to the doctor. They wouldn't let somebody go with her. She's under a lot of prejudice, caste prejudice, and then gender prejudice added on to that. So she'd really had nearly died. She said that when she was brought into the hospital, the doctors had said that they'd assumed that she was almost gone. Anyway, she was back in the land of the living, and I went to see her. Dhammachala and I went to see her at the end of the retreat, this time last week, and she was just able to lie in bed. In India, illness isn't a private thing, it's a public thing. So the room was full of people coming and going, and sisters and brothers-in-law and mothers and fathers and cousins and aunts and uncles and all the friends from the neighbourhood dropping in all the time. She told me, I'm exhausted. So she's a wonderful, very, very lively, very positive, extremely devoted, highly intelligent woman. A real product of our movement. I cannot imagine her having emerged from the circumstances she's coming from under any other circumstances. She was born in Modinagar, which is an industrial town about an hour away from, 2 hours away from Delhi. It's got a large Dalit quarter, which is still pretty rough. Her parents converted, I'm not sure when, I think in the 60s or 70s. Her father is actually now an order member. Our centre started there in the 1970s. And the order members who are running that centre, who are Maharashtrian Dhammacharis, were teaching karate. So from quite an early age, from a very young age, from 8 or 9 or 10, she started learning karate. And she's now a second Dan black belt, and she is studying for a PhD in physical education. She could not have done that if it wasn't for the opportunity that movement gave her. She stayed for quite a long time in the hostel in Pune, studying for an MA, I think. And she's now got a very good government job teaching in a girls' college in Agra, but under a lot of pressure to Hinduize. She's constantly being pressured to go to Hindu pujas and so forth. And there's a lot of covert and not so covert prejudice because she's a Dalit. But she said that she doesn't care. She's not going to go. She also said that she travels anywhere by herself. Even in Maharashtra, it's a bit difficult for a woman on her own. But in North India, it's extremely difficult for a woman to travel on her own. And to be honest, I'd pity any man who tried to molest her. She's small, but she's very tough. And whatever time she gets free, she spends in Dhamma work. She told me that she'd taken the 2 month summer holiday, come back to Agra, to Modinagar and Delhi, and just every day done 2 or 3 talks here and there. And she'd work really hard and felt very, very satisfied with her time. But when she got back to the college, it became clear that she'd actually been seriously ill for some days. So a very lively and likeable girl. I'm very, very fond of her. She's facing, of course, the problem of marriage, because to be a young woman, be a 28-year-old woman, is already to be on the shelf, and her parents are very worried about her, understandably. But she doesn't want to marry anybody who's not going to support her Dhamma work. She doesn't want to give that up for anything. Yes, I'm very proud of her as a human being, as an order member. I'm very proud that we were able to produce her. It's through Karunamaya, Vajrasuri, Vijaya, others who are funded by Karuna and in future by the Indian Dhamma Trust, going up to North India and working with her, running ordination retreats, other retreats, that she's become ready for ordination and is now, you know, such an active and vivid member of our order. We should all send her a lot of metta because she's still very ill. She was so pleased to see me, burst into tears when she saw me, but had to keep lying down because her frame couldn't sustain her sort of emotion. So she wasn't on the retreat, but I was very, very aware of her because she should have been. And she's very much a representative of what the funds that have been going to India have done. There's another person on that convention who's also very dear to me, a very close friend. I've known him better and known him for a much longer time, who is funded, has been funded by Karuna and will be funded by the India Dhamma Trust. He's Dhammachari Amoghasiddhi, who's been here. Many of you will know him. He's not from the north. He's from Nagpur, but he visits the north regularly, and he's the member of the ordination team, the men's ordination team, responsible for developing the process there. There are 30 or 40 men who've asked for ordination in North India. So he keeps going up regularly. Quite a trip. It's a day and a half's train journey. He suffers from asthma, so it's a bit of a toll on him, but he's very, very keen on the work. Yes, he's a member of the men's ordination team. He lives in Nagpur. He's a private preceptor, and we've just begun the consultation for him to become a public preceptor. So we're hoping very much that by the end of the year he will be our next Indian public preceptor, with Jnanashuri, who we're putting forward as a public preceptor. So much to say about Amoghasiddhi. He's a quite remarkable man. He, from a very young age, he became a youth leader. He had a very difficult upbringing, and in fact at times was forced to beg on the streets. But yes, at a very young age he became something of a leader, and he formed a branch of the Santa Sainik Dal, which was originally founded by Dr. Ambedkar. It's a sort of youth, Boy Scout brigade, I suppose you could say, semi-military. And organized a lot of social work, a lot of activities, and especially learnt karate. And he was the one who introduced karate into our movement in India. He took to the Dhamma when he heard it properly, as it were, from Lokamitra, Vivekaratna, Vimalakirti. He talked to it very, very strongly, and in 1991 was ordained. I did his public and private ordination, and has been a leading figure from then on. I know him sort of best as a translator. He translates for me a lot, and he's fluent in both Hindi and Marathi. He's very, very good English. But what I particularly notice about him is that when he translates my mood. This is what you want from a translator. I almost prefer the mood to the word. And he sort of follows the flow of my mood really, really accurately, as well as being a very accurate translator, because he's got a very good vocabulary. Very, very sensitive man. Quite unusual in a way in India. He's got an introverted side to him. He likes to spend a lot of time on his own, reading, reflecting. Well, at the same time, he's very sociable. But I want to pick out one feature of Amoghasiddhi that's rather special. He's married to Vijaya. Now, Vijaya is rather special. She's a Dhammacharini who is a member of the women's ordination team and who we are putting forward as a private preceptor. Her consultation is beginning. So they're married. They have a son, Alok. But what I want to pick out about them is that they represent a new kind of marriage, which is a feature of our movement that doesn't get into the brochures, doesn't get talked about much, but something I think is one of the most important things that we've achieved. You've got a number of order members married to order members who are living a married life that is quite different to the Indian conventional married life. They're equals, they're partners. They're following what Dr. Ambedkar said to women. He said, do not be in a hurry to marry. And when you do marry, do not see yourself as your husband's servant, far less his slave. See yourself as his companion and friend, and him as your companion and friend. And that's very much what you see, especially with Vijaya and Amoghasiddhi. They're good friends. They help each other. They work together. They're both away a lot on retreat. So what traditionally happens is that Vijaya will come back from retreat. They'll be together for a couple of days. Alok will be very happy because both his parents are there for a while. They'll sort out all the household issues and Alok's schooling issues, and then Amoghasiddhi will go off on retreat. So they do a sort of leapfrog retreat life like that. And it works very, very well. They're very, very happy together, very deeply appreciative of each other. It's something quite revolutionary. It's something I've been sort of hoping for all the time I've been working in India, because there's so much talk of social change, but the family structure remains completely unchanged. And you hear great leaders standing up and shouting, you know, we should be equal, Abali Brahmins, and so on. But then they go home and shout at the wife to bring tea and probably beat her. So there's no real equality in the home. Equality is just a rhetoric for the public sphere. And equality simply means more power for me. But in our movement, a real revolution is taking place. And you've got quite a number of order members, either married to other more order members or to Dhamma Mitras, who are living a quite different sort of married life, where there's much more of genuine equality. So I'm very, very proud of what that represents and what both Amoghasiddhi and Vijaya have achieved through the support they've got from the West. Something quite new has been created, which really needs to happen in India if there is to be a widespread social change. Because otherwise the attitudes are just handed on within the family, even though the rhetoric in public life is quite different. So there you are. That's a little vignette of the retreat that we were on. We did, of course, a lot of meditation. We did some very, very good Dhamma study. We visualized Green Tara. And we visualized Padmasambhava. We did all the practices that you're accustomed to doing here. And what delighted me was that immediately I felt myself to be in the atmosphere of the order, just like it is here. That very special sense of a deep, unspoken connection was there alive amongst us. It could not have happened without the active work that originated here from order members coming from the UK, but without the support that we've got for many, many years from Karanar, for which we're very, very grateful, and which we hope will continue in the future through the India Dhamma Trust. This sort of Dhamma revolution in the home is what we're seeing more and more. We're seeing more and more these wonderful products of our movement, like the lovely Shraddhavadri, just flowering from our work. I feel I want to go back there. And I will. And I hope that you'll all come and visit and see for yourselves these quite remarkable people working in quite difficult conditions. Bodhisaga is the main person who's got things going in North India. He's an utter phenomenon. He was a communist. 10 more minutes. Yeah. He was a communist. And fortunately, he's not a communist anymore. So, thank you very much.